Hi, it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Hourglass Bride. It's such a pleasure to have today's guest on the show. It's Labor Day weekend here in California, in the United States, and it's such a special time because people actually have this weekend, and they're spending it with families. And there's a lot of time and a lot of conversation, a lot of togetherness, a lot of thought, and a lot of appreciation for what we have in this country, a lot of appreciation for what we have in each other. And this really is a weekend about family. It's really a weekend about connecting to the people that we love and truly looking at this country in a whole different way and honoring so many people and so much of what we do. And part of the show and so much of what we do here on this show week after week, month after month, is bring you the very best guests that can improve the quality of your life. That at the end of this hour, at this end of this time that we have together, your life has improved. You have new information, new tools, new techniques to have a happier life and to actually have that happily ever after that we so dream of when we're getting married. And so today's guest is just such a great example of that. And I'm really honored and I'm really blessed and I'm really gifted because not only is she one of the most profound people on this planet and certainly somebody that shares her genius, shares her wisdom, shares her talent each and every day, but she's a very dear friend and someone that I've learned so much from. I would consider her one of my own personal mentors and one of my own personal heroes. And I learn how to deal with situations on a daily basis in a different way, just in knowing her and listening to her and to see how she reacts, how she acts, how she handles things. And then you want to emanate that. You want to learn. You want to step into that. And so today's guest is Susan Dea Hamwi. Now, Susan Dea Hamwi holds a Juris Doctorate degree from Loyola Law School and a Bachelor of Arts, Law, and Society from the University of California, Santa Barbara. She has been a member of the State Bar of California since 1989, and she completed the L.A. County Bar Association Mediation Training Program in 2001. She is the co-founder of Infinite Solutions, and she sits on the board of various nonprofit organizations. And as I was sharing her heart, she shares so generously her knowledge, her time, and who she is. And so I'm so thrilled that she's here today and talking to all of us. Early in her life, Dea was so inspired by her father's loving heart and peaceful nature, she decided to follow in his footsteps and to become an attorney with the hope of one day working alongside him in his practice. And unfortunately, he died from pancreatic cancer when she was only 16 years old. I can't imagine losing my dad that early. And despite this early hardship, Dea continued to dream of peace on earth, and she stayed the path to become an attorney. In 1991, Dea started her career as a lawyer in private practice. And at the same time, she began to serve the community as a court-appointed panel attorney for the Kenyan Juvenile Justice Center in South Central Los Angeles. And it was there that she represented minors in criminal court proceedings, while she also worked as a liaison with the officers and the families to create the best solutions for those children and their family situations. In 2000, she became a mentor to the incarcerated youth at the California Youth Authority in Victoria, California. And it was really during this time that she became and really began to shift into conscious family law, which we're going to talk about today. In 2001, Dea received her Kundalini Yoga Teacher's Training Certification. And what that did was it allowed her to step into teaching children's yoga. And here she served as a volunteer teaching Yoga for Youth, which was a nonprofit organization that teaches yoga and meditation to pregnant teenage mothers. What a beautiful thing. And to minors in youth detention facilities. Dea studied conscious and nonviolent communication, and she apprenticed with the Maori Shaman New Zealand and is an active member of the Agape community, which is Dr. Michael Beth, who is a dear friend. And in 2006, the opportunity arose to move to Settlement Works to Marina Del Rey. Now, she works on board a 57-foot yacht, and it's named Concordance. And this name symbolizes the harmony that can exist between people with divergent viewpoints. When I know that, you know, the first time that we talked about she was doing Concordance Law, I looked it up. And I'm one of these people who want to, every day I try to learn a new word. I'm always trying to expand my consciousness. And I looked at the word concordance, And I thought, oh my gosh, what a beautiful definition. And we're going to talk about that today. Every week we always ask people for a definition. What is a vow? What is marriage? What is hope? What is music? What is harmony? And today we will talk about what is concordance. And here, Settlement Works, which is concordance law, has evolved as a center for dynamic family resolution, where legal issues are resolved with mutually beneficial outcomes. And they encourage communication, they encourage healing for both parties and their families. And in addition, she has taken on cases supporting parents and individual rights to choose between natural treatments for their children. And I saw a television program that they were talking about this and a case that she was involved in, and she is just such a leader of the pack. She's such a forerunner for righteousness, for integrity, for heart, for spirit, for soul, but she is such an advocate for children's rights, for putting the children first. And so we have a show like this. It's a bridal talk radio. And so many of you are marrying somebody with children, or you're bringing your own children into the mix, or you're doing his and hers, sort of like the blending of the families, or you have, you know, wild exes that you need to deal with. And so how does that work? How do you create harmony? If you have this idea or ideal of the happily ever after, how do you have it with each other? How do you have it with your families? And certainly, how do you have that for your kids? So today, Daya continues to put her open heart into action, and that lends support into social activism, into different organizations and causes, along with divorce, custody, and dependency cases. She enjoys yoga and dancing, and she herself has a 14-year-old son who I have met, and he is, oh my God, goodness, he's just amazing. He's as radiant and as beautiful and brilliant as she is, and you can just see that he feels so safe and so loved, and she derives so much inspiration from him, and that really sparks her to serve families in need of healing and sets her forward on her journey. So I couldn't be more proud or excited to introduce today's guest, Susan Daya Hamley. Daya, welcome to the show.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Nicole. That was so so beautiful. I'm just like,
so beautiful. I mean, truly, the show that we have here, we have people getting married, and you and I have talked about this before. So many people today are getting married for the second and third time. And so they have children that they're bringing into the mix, and those children have, you know, their birth parents, and you're dealing with the birth parents, or they're blending families. And then we also have, unfortunately, because of the war, we have a lot of very young widows, somebody who's 23 with a small child and their husband was killed in Afghanistan, or we have young people, you know, who have lost a spouse to, you know, a heart attack or a sickness, and they have children and they're starting over again, and they have these children and they need to create some sort of a way for everybody to get along and for these children to be loved. And so where do you begin? Where does one even begin?
Oh, man. Well, you're just, with all the pain and suffering that so many families go through, you know, sometimes it feels like, where do you begin? But where you begin, I always say, is with your heart open and willing to see the possibility of a way through, you know, in these difficult situations. So, you know, that's where we start. And even in the most challenging and difficult times, there is a way and a solution for some resolution. And some higher, you know, way to go. And I always say put the children first. A lot of times parents will have their own battles between each other, and they forget about how it's affecting their children, or actually putting their children first. So that's sort of a place where I start in these challenging situations and then go from there.
Mm. And what is, as I was talking about at the top of the show, you know, I looked it up in the dictionary, but I'm sure that everybody right now, people are, you know, driving in their cars, or they're doing their laundry, or they're, you know, with their newborns, or they're busy getting ready and taking, you know, tearing pictures out of magazines of wedding dresses and floral arrangements.
Yeah.
And so people are not sitting by their dictionary. So what is concordance?
Well, concordance, when you looked it up, what was the dictionary term for it? What did you read? And I'll tell you how I see it.
I really got from the dictionary that it was like the highest and best interest. It was almost a place where people meet. It's, you know,
yeah.
I almost felt like it was a cocktail party definition of truly of where you meet. But it was just like the very best place you can meet, in a way.
Yeah, it's like it's at
the highest energy possible.
Yeah.
The pinnacle of good energy in a way.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And what I love about the word is it has the word dance in it. So the flow and the ebb of concordance, you know, you got to move and ebb and everything's changing and moving and we're creating and we're allowing and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And that's why I chose that word for the type of practice that I have, which is true harmony, creating true harmony. So it's not always
and so how
like
do you do
that?
Easy. Yes. Yeah.
It's not always
easy. How do you truly...
How do you create that? Well, what you do is you create a space that's open and comfortable and allowing of open communication without any judgment, and you allow people to really express themselves and really share their needs. Because until you get to a place where people are actually sharing from their heart and what's going on underlying a lot of the surface things that are going on, that's where you can find a solution and true concordance. So you allow a space, we create a space on in our office on the yacht in Marina Del Rey, California, where people can come and feel safe and feel comfortable and allowed to express themselves, and then we can move forward with the legal issues, because, you know, there's sometimes more than just a legal issue. There's underlying emotional issues, underlying needs that haven't been expressed because there's been breakdowns in communication and a couple maybe not be talking for a while, or they might be shut down, or, you know, there's so many, many reasons why communication has broken down. But, during the transition times, and, you know, I do a lot more than just helping people through times of divorce, but, you know, also when they're trying to figure out how they're going to have their child custody visitation, with the blended families, and, you know, and there's just so many different issues that come up, but that's the place to start.
And so when people come to you, and a lot of people, and it's so unfortunate, and it's so sad, and it's so crazy in today's world, in any time and space, that people use their children as, like, bargaining chips or pawns, or they're mad, and they're like, so then you're not going to get to see this child, or I'm going to make sure, or I'm going to say bad things about you, so this child will hate you. And so how do you say to somebody, stop? Stop making that child a volleyball, and
you just tell them. First of all, you know, you have to make a connection with your client, the person that's there, and they have to feel like you're there, supporting their best interests, and that's both sides. You know, that you're there as a neutral party, because I am a neutral party when I'm acting as a concordance mediator, and also, I'm a lawyer, an attorney as well, but I'm acting as a neutral party to the benefit of the family, as the whole unit of them and their children, and what works best for the holistic family unit. So it's a different, that's the difference in approach. And where was I? What were you specifically asking? Sorry.
That when people are using their children as pawns, or they're using children to take out their anger to get back at their spouse.
Okay. So if you create that environment there where they're all in there and they're understanding that that's why they're there, if they start, if you know one party is doing that, or the other party, or often both of the parties, you know, I remind them. I'm reminding them the whole time that their children are looking to them and looking to how they're being. And how they're resolving these issues and how they're acting and everything now. And, you know, you guys are, they're aware. And if you can come together and resolve these differences and stop putting each other down and, you know, just really move forward. Your kids, you're doing a great service to your children, and they'll remember it for the rest of their lives. Now, if you guys want to, you know, tear each other apart and go that other route, well, they're going to witness that too. And what's that going to do for them and their relationships moving forward and your family as a whole? So, you know, sometimes you have to remind the parties of that, and, you know, sometimes they just have to release the anger, and sometimes it's just actually them communicating in an open environment where they can express their anger, and then they can let it go. And I'm not saying it always happens quickly, but it's at least moving in the right direction, you know. So that's what I would say is the process.
Now, in today's world also, oh, that's incredible. In today's world we also have, and this is something I know that we've never discussed, but it certainly has come up in the cases that we're going through, especially as people are getting married, there are a lot of grandparents that are now have custody of their kids or their co-guardianship. And so do you work on those cases as well? And how does that work to have a grandparent have rights to be able to take child so they can have shots or that they can register for school or so they can join, you know, a class or whatever, because a lot of times they'll say, well, you're the grandparents and you don't have any rights, but those grandparents are raising those children.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of grandparents raising children, their children's children, and sometimes it's because of necessity, because parents either in jail or, you know, they're incapable or they're just not, you know, able to meet the child's needs at the time. Sometimes it's a temporary, grant of legal authority to make the decisions for the child. So it depends on the situation. But legally, yes, if you're a biological parent to a child, you can always give your parents that right to, you know, raise your child. But that it's not always like that. You know, some parents agree to that. And some parents are actually forced to that when they're not able to meet the child's needs, and then the grandparents step in. So there's different situations depending on the circumstances. But, yes, grandparents have asserted their rights, and a lot of times when parents are unable to meet their child's needs or, you know, for whatever reason, you know, or they're working on, you know, getting there so that they can be good parents, grandparents do step in, sometimes by court order and sometimes by agreement of the parties. So it is a big issue, and there are a lot of grandparents that are very actively involved in their grandkids' lives.
And if they're doing it as an agreement, then do they come see you and you can help them, you know, figure something out, or is something that's written that says that they're a guardian, or that, I mean,
absolutely,
how does that work, or do they have to go to court for that, or can they?
It's all by contract and agreement. They can file an official guardianship document if they want to just have them be guardians for a period of time, you know, temporarily. You know, a lot of times parents don't want to give their parents full custody rights for you know, forever, indefinitely, but they want to grant, you know, a specific period of time, and they can do it that way as well. It can be done, you know, yes, we can handle that, and we can help them decide what works best for their family and come up with an agreement, and it can be filed with the court. That's pretty easy to do. I mean, the filing of all of that is not so difficult. If you have agreement of the parties, it makes it really easy. So
that's fantastic. And how did you get started working with kids? I mean, of all the things that you could have done, I mean, reading your background is so diverse, and your father being an attorney, and you, I mean, so law has been a part of your life, you know, forever. And then how did you become such an advocate for children's rights?
Well, you know, when you look back in time, I had a lot of challenges as a child. I had my issues with sexual abuse and different things along the way. And, you know, I was a very sensitive child, and I always, I had great parents, but I still had issues along the way, you know, that came up. You can have great parents and still have a lot of things that come up for you as a child. So I was always very, very sensitive as a child, and I was really drawn to just knowing that childhood is such a precious time, and it's so much about love and having the love and feeling the love. And, you know, that's the one gift that I think that we can give to children is love, unconditional love, no matter what. And I found that being a lawyer for children, that was how I first started being a lawyer. I was a lawyer for kids in South Central, which is what you would call the hood of Los Angeles. And, you know, I just felt like sometimes it would just tell me that, gosh, you love me, and like, nobody's ever loved me. You care about me. And I would just, my heart would sink, and I just, you know, you just wanted to be there for them. And so I found that very rewarding to be there and to support the children and the families in the best way I could. And, yeah, there was such a need for that representation. So I was very much drawn to it. But probably I would say because of my childhood and the challenges I had personally and the sensitive child that I was drew me to want to work with children. And that's the human side of law is really where I'm drawn to, the human relationships and the human side. And, you know, I was a minor in psychology and sociology, so I always wanted to help and figure out how I could best serve, you know, humanity and children in particular. So
it's really incredible. And when you were working with the children as far as defending children, when I say that you love me and I've never been loved before and I, you know, my heart just when I feel that, I know that I've done a lot of work with One Voice, which is an organization that feeds 35,000 families under poverty level every year, and they have an adopt-a-family program. And I remember that we went to a house and this little boy grabbed a towel out of the box and he pulled a towel to his chest and he said, "Is this a pillow? I've never had a pillow before."
Mm.
And we said, "No, it's a towel," but he had never had a towel either. And so some of these kids, you know, they have so little. And then the world is pushing them down. And even, you know, and so to be able to stand up and fight for the child's rights and the best, I mean, I just can't think of a better thing to do. It's like, you know, you're a hero. You really are, each and every case.
Well, thank you. It just gives me joy to know that I'm there for a child. And, you know, another thing that was very touching to me is one of the kids I represented, I think he was 14 or 15 at the time, and he said, "Am I a bad person? Do you think I'm a bad person because I did this?" And I looked at him and I said, "No, you're not a bad person. Just sometimes we don't make our highest choices, you know, but you're good. You have a big heart, you know, just so they kind of, you know, they're marked as bad. And, you know, it's so debilitating and so difficult for them emotionally, you know, when they're labeled bad. And so, you know, that was part of my, I guess, practice with the children is to really mentor them, because I was also a mentor for a lot of youth, incarcerated youth, and just mentor them that, you know, just because they're incarcerated now or in juvenile hall doesn't mean that they're bad and they can't, you know, have a life and, you know, come out and be successful and do good for the planet and do good for themselves and do good for their families. So that was a really important part of my practice.
I just love that. I mean, it's so amazing. And so many kids just don't have the opportunities. I remember that I was working in a pediatric pain program, and there was a little boy whose father just beat him like crazy. And I asked him what his favorite sport was, and he said football because you wear protective gear when you're being hit. You know, and so when kids say things, it's like, what do you say? Or his dream was to scuba dive because no one could get to him under the sea. And you know, so to come in and to protect these kids. And so now you've got a lot of kids who, you know, were abused or they were hurt or they certainly have not had such a great chance. And now their mother or their father is marrying someone wonderful. And they're having an opportunity to have a new life. but yet they still have to go see that parent that hurt them, you know, a couple times a year or on assigned visitation. And so how do you deal with that with the kids?
It is so hard. Oh, my gosh. I have some of the most challenging cases around that, that I supported families where there's an abuser in the family and the court is still allowing visitation and, you know, hasn't, you know, and you know, as the parent of the non-abusive parent has to allow their kids to go into that environment, it really takes a lot of trust that, you know, there's something higher there working in, for the good and protecting your child, you know. It's challenging. I mean, our legal system isn't unnecessarily, in a lot of cases, protecting the children or, you know, judges or just people, and they have, you know, they don't always come out with what I would say is the highest good for the family. And so there's situations, you know, that you just as beings have to take on. And, yeah, all I can say to the mother or the father of, you know, the parent that, you know, is abusing the child is just, gosh, you know, just shower them with love when you're with them, because sometimes you don't have control over when they're with the other parent. And it's very difficult. It's a very difficult situation. You know, it happens, like, a lot, you know, in our society. So just shower them with love when they're with you and let them, you know, let them keep the communication channels open with your children as much as possible. You know, sometimes have them see somebody who can they can express themselves with, whether it's a, you know, a therapist or a counselor or someone they trust. But just make sure the child knows they're loved, you know, so...
That's such great advice. And can kids get emancipated? You know, you see movies where they're like, okay, I'm divorcing my family. Can kids really do that?
It's not as easy as just, I want to be emancipated, and I'm going to get emancipated. It's not like that. You have to actually show the court that you're like, if these are the kids that, like, at 16 always have their job or graduated from high school or can live on their own. They have to show that they you know, have the means to live on their own. And some kids can. You know, not most kids can't, so it's not like that. And your parents generally have to sign off on it if they're, you know, not all parents want their kids emancipated. So it's not all that simple. There's some hoops they have to jump through before the court approves an emancipation. So, yeah.
Because you see the movies and you're like, wow, can kids do that? I mean, I was lucky because I had such an amazing family, and, you know, and they're still taking care of me. But
I was going to say that, you know, I just saw a movie on homeless in America and children homelessness and children. There's a lot of kids who run away, fortunately, when they want to get away from their families because their families are so dysfunctional and they're not actually out there. You know, seeking help or, you know, getting support or that too. So that's another issue. You know, we have a lot of children out there that aren't. So also all the parents that are there, you know, just love your children as much as you can and give them as much as you can, you know. I want to be on a positive.
Because
we are really blessed. All of us are on so many levels we don't see it sometimes until we look outside of our box, you know, and then we see what other people are going through. So sometimes you think your issue is so big when it is big for you, and I don't want to discount that. But at the same time, there is a solution in many of these circumstances that you think there might not be. So just always stay positive, you know.
I love that. And so when should somebody start to look for you? Or, I mean, if somebody says, okay, I'm getting divorced and I have children, or even I don't have children, but I don't want to, you know, make this crazy and for us to be in court and to make each other wrong and bad and throw, mud for years and torture the other person, but I just wish them a happy life for whatever reason. You know, we've grown into different people. And so do people reach for you to begin, or do people reach for you when they're when nothing else works, or because
it's
just gotten out of hand, or at what point do they call you and say, I need help?
It's a combination of all of them. Sometimes couples will come to me because they just know that they don't want to get lawyers traditionally and fight it out and spend a lot of money and a lot of time and go down that path. And they'll come to me because they realize that this is a more friendly environment where they can come in and they can work out their solution together and be a lot more creative and do, you know, can be a lot more creative in the atmosphere that I'm in, that we provide, because they can, you know, create their own agreements, whereas when they go to court, it's pretty much what the judge says and that's that. And you can't be very creative and you can't think outside the box because there's a box in the courtroom. So that's one situation where they're like of the mindset that this is the way they want to do it, and they want to save money, they want to keep their, you know, family intact and harmonized and move on gracefully. Or they're the type who, like, maybe have spent a year or two or 3 years fighting in court, they hire lawyers and they go at each other for a while, they spend so much money and they're so drained emotionally and physically, you know, and so much, and their kids are, you know, having issues, and then they come and they said, gosh, we want this over with, can you help us? And I said, of course, you know, come on in, and then, you know, then we work it through. So sometimes the families almost have to go through that other process where they're thinking, you know, they come in because they think that, well, they have to get a lawyer to protect their rights, or they have to do it this way, you know, otherwise they're going to get, you know, not a fair shake or this or that, and so they have to, they do go through that process first, and then they come along. It's a combination of all of that. And then I have families who come where they're already, you know, been divorced once, and they have blended families, and they just want to talk about how they can restructure their visitation and custody arrangements, and they can come in and we can work agreements out that way without them having to go to court and spend all that extra money that it costs to litigate, to go into court.
What a different solution, and what a positive solution than all of the fighting. I remember that I had friends that got divorced, and they bought their kids a house.
Uh-huh.
And I never forgot that, but they actually bought their kids a house. And the mother and father each had, like, small apartments somewhere, and half the week the mother came to the kid's house, and half the week the father came to the kid's house, and
mm-hmm.
the kids never had to move their toys, their clothes, their items.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, just went, whatever that is. And
mm-hmm.
so half the week the mother was there, and half the week the father was there
mm-hmm.
with them, and they just had their life. And I thought that was the best that I had seen. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's never a great situation
mm-hmm.
to separate a family, but I thought how wonderful that the kids weren't ping-ponging
uh-huh.
back and forth
uh-huh.
between different
right.
houses and families. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's an arrangement
so
that certain families actually have. We've had that arrangement before. So there's stability there for the children, and then the parents, you know, come in and out rather than the kids moving back and forth. So, yeah.
I think it's such a wonderful solution. I mean, when I heard that, I just thought, what a genius idea, and how wonderful for these kids to have their rooms, their things, their desks, their
mm-hmm.
whatever,
mm-hmm.
and not have to pack up and have to be moved about and, you know, have different cards played.
I totally agree with you on that. And ideally, if that can be done, I think it's a beautiful solution. Not all families can work that way out, you know, work that out. You know, sometimes, you know, that's not available, you know. So, but when it is, it certainly is nice because it gives a continuity for the children. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And then how did you end up on a houseboat in Marina Del Rey? I mean,
well,
all the places you could have a law office or a boat in Marina Del Rey. I mean, when you just reading it, and I mean, I've been blessed because I had an opportunity to go there, and I know I just sat there and went, oh my gosh, this is so nice. I never want to leave. This is just so lovely. And when you think about going to a lawyer's office, you're always like, oh no, it's ominous and foreboding and it's sort of scary. And like, you know,
yeah.
And here it's like going on vacation. So how did, I mean, first it's fantastic and the energy is just blissful. And then how did you end up there? I mean,
Well, I had a lovely business partner. His name is Dennis Cohen, and we work together. Often we work together, but he is an avid sailor, an avid boater. He's got three different boats. And he and I just thought up, well, why don't we have our offices on a yacht? You know, it's an old, restored Chris Craft yacht, and it's all wooden, and it's beautiful. And, you know, we can see clients on the water. It's, like, got this great healing energy, and the vibration is nice. And, you know, if they're upset at each other, they're breathing fresh air, and it's calming. And, you know, it's a perfect setting for, you know, going through these most challenging times, you know, and these transition times. So we just said, let's just do it. Let's have an office on the water. And so we created a beautiful living room space type with couches and everything, very, very comfortable. And all our clients love it. They love it. They're like, this is so nice. Can I come to the boat? Should I have a family issue just to come visit you? So, yeah, that's how it birthed. And, you know, we knew it was unique. And, you know, I was always tired of working in buildings, and you know, I love the water, and I think it's very healing to be on the water, and it's just peaceful there, and you know, it's just nice. It's nice to have an office there. So,
It's just joyful. It's, I mean, when you think about joy, it's joyful. I truly, when I went there, I was just like, this is genius. Oh my goodness, this is just amazing. It feels just so comforting, like you're just being wrapped in warmth and love and safety, and there's just something that feels so right about it. And so I just think that's fantastic. I really do. And then I loved, you know, all these years that I've known you, and I, like I was saying at the top of the show, you really are such a hero and such a mentor of mine, because just the way you deal with relationships, and how I've watched you, you know, teach people and guide people and love people and share and support people, and you know, and you've done it for my own life, and I've learned so much. But do you know that all the years that I've known you, and as much as I know about you, today was the first day I know about your yoga background. I didn't know that.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, you know, we all have so many, we're like kaleidoscopes of things, and you too, Nicole. Every time I talk to you, there's something else you're doing that I didn't know about. So, I mean, I guess when you really find the joy in your life, you connect with it, you know, you want to serve, and you want to do more, and you want to participate, and it's kind of how my life has evolved, and I'm very appreciative and feel very blessed. I've had these opportunities to serve in so many ways, so,
So you taught yoga to kids?
Oh, the yoga.
What did you say, to pregnant mothers?
Yes, and to incarcerated youth, yes. Well, so I loved, you know, yoga. Yoga was just such a powerful practice for me for many, many, many years, and I still do yoga, but not as intensely as I did back in the day. So I loved Kundalini yoga, because it was just, I love all yoga, and Kundalini in particular really allowed me to release a lot of my stuff, let's just put it that way, and you know, I really connected with my inner self, and I was really able to take that into my work and get really clear about what direction I wanted to go in. So, yeah, I took teacher's training. I did yoga, I think, for 4 or 5 years, and I was like, well, why not? Just take teacher's training. And so I took teacher's training for pregnant moms, and I took regular teacher's training. And this was at Golden Bridge in Los Angeles, great studio. And then I started teaching. A little bit here and there to children, of course, and then in the jail facilities, and as well as with pregnant moms, you know, who so much need to connect with their inner self and their inner child, you know, while they're pregnant. It's just so important, and they just so love the yoga. And so I did that. I felt like I wanted to give back a little, and don't do it so much anymore, because I'm focusing more on my legal practice of service, but sure was a great time for me, you know, and it's just another way to really really do some work. Just great. I loved it.
And what a great
so
way to center. It really, when I think about yoga and I'm reading about that, I said, well, it makes so much sense with your mediation, too, the fact that you would be able to be so centered and so on point and be able to go through all of the chakras and just to breathe and to relax and to allow and to trust and to create movement, like you're talking about the dance and concordance. And so the fact that that's part of your background, it's just perfection and the tapestry of who you are. I was reading that, and even though it was new information, I was like, but of course, absolutely that would be what you would choose. And it's just it's such a beautiful part of you.
It was,
and it was so nice.
Amazing.
It was like a little gem I found today in your bio. I was like, wow.
Oh, yes.
And then,
thanks, Nicole.
And then, of course, and then how do people find you? How does, you know, do you have a website or do people call or email you? And
yeah, they can definitely find me. I have two websites. It would be Settlement Works, you know, www.settlementworks.com, SettlementWorks.com, and also ConcordanceLaw.com. That's Concordance, ConcordanceLaw.com. ConcordanceLaw.com, excuse me. And, they can find a little more information about what we do and how we do it and some background there on our practice on the yacht, Marina Del Rey. And, my phone number, I can give my cell number. You know, if someone wants to reach me, they can call me at 310-210-7550, 310-210-7550.
Perfect, and we'll definitely make sure to post that as well. And I definitely think that if somebody is going through a divorce or they are combining families or they are dealing with custody arrangements or even if you know grandparents that are now taking over or even if there's a child in your neighborhood that needs some protection and care.
Yeah, we also I have a few once in a while I have families that coming in for premarital or prenuptial agreements, or they just want to kind of talk about things before they get married. They want to understand what their rights are and, you know, what happens when they get divorced. And not that they want to know, but they want to just know how their property is divided. They want basics so that they can make right choices, you know, and kind of figure out how they're going to do their expenses and, you know, how they're going to divide assets and if they're going to, you know, call things separate and just kind of get a really clear understanding. So we do have some clients that come even before they're married to see us just to get some background. So that's interesting part of what we do too as well.
That's such a wise idea. It really is to go in beforehand and just to say we want to start this marriage in harmony and peace. And we want to make sure it stays in harmony and peace. And these are things we question her and we're not clear of. And instead of projecting it onto each other or instead of, you know, being afraid to ask questions, we can openly have conversations and discussions and make sure that everybody feels safe and wonderful and warm. And this is, you know, a way that we can create an enchanted life together through communication and through love, which is really what you teach and what you do. So I think that's spectacular for people to come see you first, and I would highly recommend that to people.
Yeah.
It's great.
Thank you.
And then
thank
I remember
you,
that, of course. And then can I ask you, because I remember, and I was talking about at the top of the show, that I believe you were involved in a medical case, too, with the kid.
Oh, yeah.
There was.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so,
I was.
So you protect kids in all areas. Can you talk about that a little, or how you do?
Yeah, I can talk about that a little bit. Yeah, it was a national case. It was quite a big case. It was a case in Minnesota where a family, and I'm just summing it up for the listeners, is that you know, he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and the parents really wanted to choose more non-invasive treatment for their child's condition, and they didn't want to do the chemo and radiation. And what happened is their doctor turned them into Child Protective Services for not following the doctor's orders, and it was a big court case because they wanted their right to choose for their child the course of treatment. And, you know, if I don't know how many of your listeners know that, you know, in a lot of other countries and a lot of other places, there's a lot of various treatments for that type of cancer and cancers. And so it was really whether the state could take control or make the decision over the child. The parent had that right, you know, and the child was 13, so, you know, he didn't want it. He didn't want any of it, and they didn't think he was old enough to make the decision. So it went to court, and it was, you know, it was the parent and the child left before the court made its final ruling and everything, and they wanted to go get some treatment somewhere else. So, you know, it was a big deal. The FBI came out. It was a big, anyway, Shabak, you can read it online if you want. His name is Danny Hauser, and it's a case in Minnesota. So I, you know, I was just an advocate for the family in that case. I was sort of the liaison between their lawyers and the system and all the doctors who came forward from all over the world wanting to help Danny with all their different available treatments. You know, it was really something. And, you know, I thought it was an interesting case because, you know, these are parents who are well-informed, you know, knew that juicing and needing a lot of alternative treatments cure cancer versus the system who the standard of care was just simply you have to do radiation chemo. So it was quite fascinating case. And, I felt like the parents really should have the choice there. And they were very well informed, like I said, and they had it all planned out, his whole treatment planned out and what they wanted to do. And they weren't allowed to do it. So that was that case. Also, I'm quite an advocate for freedom of choice, whether you choose or not choose vaccines. You know, a lot of families choose not to have vaccines for their children. And, you know, you do have that choice. And a lot of times I think they're scared into getting them. You know, they've heard that some of them aren't maybe necessarily the best for their children. And, you know, I, without taking sides, I just feel like that should be the parent's choice given what's out there right now. So I've helped families also make sure that they know exactly how to handle that if they choose not to have vaccinations. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I have had personal experience of working with children who have been severely embarrassed by vaccines.
Yeah, I think that, you know, certain vaccinations, there's a lot more literature out as to whether or not they're safer or not safe. And that's it's a big deal for parents to make decisions on that. I mean, it is big. It's a big topic right now for a lot of parents. So and I think it's important that they'll be allowed to make those choices. So anyway. The biggest thing, like the one thing that I wanted to leave with the parents or, you know, soon-to-be parents on the that are listening is that the biggest thing you can do, the best thing you can do for your family and your child is to make sure that you pick your doctors or your naturopaths or your MDs or whoever's treating your family or your children that are in alignment with your belief system. So alignment with your belief system as to, you know, if you believe in, you know, certain alternative treatments and a combination of medical treatments, then pick a doctor that's open to all of that, you know, rather than someone who's just very mainstream standard of care, you know. So just pick who, you know, you go to wisely, and you can do your research, and there's a lot of great practitioners, both MDs, naturopaths, and others out there that you can really find someone who will be great for your family. So, and then you won't run into any of those issues.
That's really, really wonderful advice, especially now when so many doctors are so quick to medicate. You know, we had Dr. Kevin Emery Ross, which is talking about ADD, you know, and like how, you know, easy it is for a doctor to say, oh, this kid is hyperactive and we're giving him this drug or her this drug or we're going to, you know, whatever this is, or a little small, so we're going to give him this, and that so many doctors are just so quick to medicate children.
Right. Yeah, I mean, sometimes they just don't know what to do, you know, and they don't. I think that right now there are so many alternative options. You can, you know, take the time to look them up and explore them, that you'll find that there's different things that you can do rather than taking the pharmaceutical right away. You know, I don't want to tell, you know, I certainly don't want to play doctor or suggest or anything. It's just to stay open that there are other possibilities, and then you choose what's best for your child, you know.
And I think that's what we're talking about is so perfect and so applicable, because it's exactly in line with what you do. And so before you get divorced, before you wage war against your ex and use your child, you know, as a bargaining chip, before you decide that, you know, you're going to start this new life or whatever, and you know, you're not taking the person, you know, from the past into your future or whatever it is, or even like you're saying, before you even begin the journey together, to sit down, that what a wonderful way to say that, okay, before we begin, let's realize there are other options and other choices, whether that be in vaccinations, whether that be in medical care, whether that be in legal, whether that be in divorce or in how to raise our children, whether there are other options.
That's so important.
That are,
I think it's so important for new couples or folks planning on getting married to actually talk about things like that, like see if they're on the same page, because a lot of stuff comes up once you're married and there's hardly divergent views on whether it be religion or it be, you know, health care or whatever for their children, and those become issues in the family. So it is good to talk about all that early on, see how closely aligned you are, you know.
Absolutely.
And if that's going to be,
I mean, I know for myself, when you're talking about vaccinations, it's funny because I have two tiny little dogs. And I have one dog that's 2 pounds, 3 ounces, and one dog that's just a little over 3 pounds. And the idea of getting them vaccinated, because the needle is bigger than the 2 pound, 3 ounce dog. And they say, oh, because she's, you know, only because she's under 3 pounds, full grown, then, you know, instead of doing like 3 shots in one, you do it over, you know, 2 weeks and come back 2 weeks later, you know, they have to do it in little itty bits. And, but they're saying that it's the law that she, you know, gets vaccinated. She's 2 pounds, 3 ounces and sleeps in a cowboy hat and doesn't leave the carpet. You know, it's like, where did she go? It's like, you know, and so when you look at, you know, that people say this is the way it has to be, and you can look at what is the particular situation, you know, with this child, with this family, with this spouse, and what are our options? And can we choose an option that first starts in our heart and first starts with the vision and desire that the end result is love and win-win, that the end result is happiness and joy for everybody.
That's a beautiful way to go. And so much of what I do is, if there are divergent points of view or you can't, the couple can't agree on certain things, you know, they choose to compromise, because that's where I have a rating system. Okay, is it a 1 or a 10? And you're like, you know, sometimes we have needs that are just like really, really important to us. Like, I have to have that. That's a 10 in my book. Or maybe it's just a 5, you know, and you guys can compromise. You know, it's not that important. And, you know, so there's some of that going on in the process of finding a solution for the family when there's divergent viewpoints, you know. So there's that. And I also wanted to say that, you know, if you're considering doing this concordance law, the mediation for your family, a lot of times people go, well, I don't know if it's going to work for me, and I don't know if I, you know, really, my partner, he's, you know, we have so much this and distress, and there's so much, you know, so different and this and that, and I always say, I said, well, you know, it certainly doesn't hurt, and it can only help to try it, because if you come in, at least you know that you've done your best to consciously try to choose to work together and find a solution rather than going that other route. And a lot of times, I even think couples are pleasantly surprised that once they come in and they see what this is all about, that they can actually work it all out together without the traditional adversarial lawyer approach. So that's a nice thing. I just like to say that, because we find that a lot of people are a little skeptical about it, you know, not sure, you know, if it would work for them. So anyway.
But wouldn't you always choose dessert first, if you could? I mean, if you get to go,
absolutely,
you always can say, well, I'll have the hot fudge sundae, and then, oh, you know, I mean, kids
I
do
know.
That for breakfast. They're like, I'll have a popsicle, and you're like, how about eggs? And so, we always would, our natural instinct is to choose the thing that's good and sweet first, and then have, you know, the other stuff. And if the thing that's good and sweet ends up being what's healthy and best for us, then, oh, my gosh. That's a win.
Oh my gosh!
So
yeah, that's our ultimate. We want to create that space and place for. I mean, I call it magic. Sometimes you don't even know where or how it's going to work out, and then magically, you know, energetically, we come to a resolution. Sometimes it takes a little time, but you know, as long as you're working towards that and you're aiming towards that, we get there eventually. Sometimes it's quick, and sometimes it takes a little bit of work. But it's sure in the end, you know, seeing couples hugging and, you know, rather than snarling, you know, it's a lovely thing, you know. They're hugging and saying thank you and looking at each other and walking off together, you know, as working towards being friends, because you have to parent for, you know, your parents of these children, whether you're together or not together. So, you know, it really behooves parents to at least be cordial to each other and work towards a friendship eventually, you know. And if they're friends all along, that's even better. But, you know, sometimes it takes a little work to let some of the pain go and some of the you know, upset and all of that. But it sure is a good path to go down. And we help support that during our process with the couples, so...
That's so beautiful.
I'm
so glad you were with us today. I feel so honored. And I know that this information, it can help people that are on the show. And I really implore you all, before you go ahead and go to court and throw darts and hurt one another, you know, find, please reach out and from your heart and take the time, look at your options, think about concordance, think about a different way to do it. And I just, it is magic, and I just feel so grateful that you were here today. What a great tool and what a great technique to be able to help the people, and I wish you all the best in your dance of life and in your dance of helping everybody be able to create
Nicole,
that win-win situation, and certainly for the children.
Nicole, it was such an honor and blessing to be in your presence and on your show. I so appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you, and have a wonderful week, and we really look forward to talking to you again. So thank you.
All right. Bye.
What a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful person. That was Susan Dea Hamley and Concordance Law. And to be able to put the child first and to put peace first and your heart first and to be able to say that I want to put love first and humanity first before we go out and before we decide to hurt one another. Why can't we love one another? Like she said, arm in arm, why can't we be friends and why can't we be able to parent and raise children to their highest and greatest and have these win-win situations? And oh my goodness, you know, her office is on a boat in Marina Del Rey. It's a fabulous place just to go and to calm down and to have that option, a positive option of being able to move forward and have that kind of life that we dream of and desire. So I just think that's brilliant. And then next week, we have Sydney Cressy. And Sydney is one of my favorite people. And we're going to talk about exotic locations and destination weddings, but honeymoon locations and where you go to, you know, every year on your anniversary, and these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful vacations and islands and places you can go together, and how to really make that fairy tale come true. And nobody knows how to do that like Sydney Cressy. So that's just going to be phenomenal. And then next Saturday on Unlimited Life, we're talking about success on your own terms. And how do you have that successful life? So even for brides, how do you have that successful marriage? How do you have that life that you always dreamed of and desired? So we've got such great shows coming up for you. I wish you all a wonderful weekend. If you're with your families and this is a time that you're connecting and being together, then certainly realize how much you have. Be grateful, be thankful, be loving, be safe out there this weekend. And before you ever put on gloves and decide to fight, find Concordance Law and Susan Dea Hamley, and instead open your heart and have the option of win-win, love, joy, and certainly always put your children and your child's best interests first, because they really are the creation of you into the future. And so do it with joy. Do it with compassion, do it with care, and do it with concordance. So I wish you all a wonderful week. This is Nicole Brandon, Hourglass Bride. I will see you next Sunday for Sydney Cressy, and we will go on this exotic fantasy journey together and learn how to get there with your mate and how to have that kind of vacations for your life. Have a wonderful weekend.